We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 135 of the Spurs Up Show, the best Gamecocks podcast on the internet. It is the bye week, but I got a packed show for you guys as I go over some housekeeping items, including one of the biggest announcements in the history of the Spurs Up Show's business lifetime. I'll go over that. Also, my bye week blues, talk about the bye week, what I think South Carolina needs to work on most over the bye week. Also have news and notes from Frank Martin's presser, the Georgia game kickoff being announced, a couple Gamecocks getting some awards, Gamecocks lacrosse, baseball, your listener questions and voicemails, and much, much more. Also, have a fantastic interview with former Gamecocks running back Derek Watson, a.k.a. Squeaky, as we talk about his career at South Carolina, battling adversity off the field, his professional career, what he's learned the most throughout life in general, and much, much more. Before we get into all that, this is a podcast presented to you by our friends over at Tannehill's Group Therapy. Yes, Tannehill's Group Therapy, the oldest bar in Five Points, owned by legendary USC quarterback Steve Tannehill. They've got great specials for you guys, including Taco Tuesday, Wing Wednesday. They're perfect if you're a local here in Columbia and want to grab a bite to eat, or if you're in town for game day, or if you want a fun night out in the town, Tannehill's is the way to go. Again, that's Tannehill's Group Therapy, located down in Five Points. Be sure to check them out and tell them Chris from the Spurs Up Show sent you. All right, I'm Chris Phillips, your host of the Spurs Up Show. As always, it is the bye week. And does anybody else have the bye week blues like I do? No Gamecock football this weekend. Gamecocks having one of their two bye weeks for the 2019 season. You know, it's funny. I was taking a look at this bye week initially, and I was like, you know what? This will be good. We all get to kind of step away, relax. We're going into it off of a victory. Everybody feels good. But now that we're getting later in the week, and I'm sitting there thinking, I'm like, man, like, I'm obviously going to watch football Saturday, but I already miss Gamecocks football. Like, I wish I was looking forward to a game on Saturday. But either way, Gamecocks, the team at least, getting probably some much-needed rest after the Kentucky victory. Before we get into everything, like I said, I got a couple news and notes here. A lot of your listener questions, I'll spend most of the show on that. But I do want to go over some housekeeping items, including a major, 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 major announcement regarding the Spurs Up Show, a business-changing type announcement. I have not made the announcement on social media yet. If you're hearing this on Thursday morning, we'll probably do so later sometime on Thursday. But some very overwhelming, exciting news, some news that I didn't expect to bring you guys at any point, something that I did not expect to happen, but very excited about, and I want to share it with you. So the last couple of weeks, I've kind of been in the works. You guys may have seen, I actually tweeted a couple weeks ago that there was some business-changing type news coming, and the deal was made official on Wednesday afternoon. It's crazy. I mean, I'm just overwhelmed just thinking about it. But just to let you guys know, awesome stuff. You're probably familiar with the outlet Palmetto Moon. I believe they have 10 or 11 locations across the state of South Carolina. The Spurs Up Show merchandise, a couple of specific pieces, which I won't announce yet. I want to wait until they're produced and they're actually in the stores, and then we'll kind of announce which ones they are. But a couple of different pieces from the Spurs Up Show store, which I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with. The Spurs Up Show merch is going to be sold in Palmetto Moon at wholesale on a massive scale in every single location that Palmetto Moon has across the state of South Carolina, I believe, but in a massive scale. The Spurs Up Show merch being sold in Palmetto Moon, Obviously, as you guys can imagine, again, you're probably, a lot of you are probably familiar with Palmetto Moon, and if you're not, basically it's a store you can find like in malls and stuff like that. They sell like Palmetto stuff, so like South Carolina generic stuff, like Palmetto Tree type stuff, Carolina stuff, Clemson stuff, whatever. So the Spurs Up Show merchandise is going to be in that store. So, you know, again, a huge, overwhelming, awesome, amazing announcement. Again, you know, like just a game changer for me, for the Spurs Up Show, for the business, for everything. You know, it's funny, I have always done the Spurs Up Show store and really enjoyed it, and, you know, love doing the merch. I really do. I love being able to be creative with it and create cool stuff and cool shirts and give fans some unique merchandise, if you will, to wear on game day or just wear around in general. But never in my wildest dreams did I see the merchandise really jumping ahead to the forefront of the Spurs Up Show and what I'm doing. And it's crazy. So I really do appreciate everyone who has supported, because without you guys, it wouldn't have happened. Because I'll give you kind of some insight and a story. The way that it actually happened is that Palmetto Moon had people coming into their Columbia locations. They have two locations in Columbia. They had people coming into their two Columbia locations asking for shirts that are on the Spurs Up Show store, asking for shirts. And that's how the Spurs Up or Palmetto Moon basically reached out to me, and that's how they found out about it. So without the supporters, this would not have happened. So I just want to say to you guys, I'm eternally grateful. I'm so thankful. And this is, as you can imagine, it's just amazing news. And I'm just so excited for this. It's overwhelming. It's crazy. So I just want to give you guys the good news. Obviously, I know you guys would be, you know, probably interested to hear it. And obviously I'll make a formal announcement on social media probably sometime Thursday, but you know, it's just crazy. I mean, I can't put into words how excited I am, how thankful I am, how humbled I am, how grateful I am, just everything. So another thing I want to say, another thank you to the fans. Everyone I saw at the tailgates, everyone that shouted me out, said hello. It never goes unnoticed. I really, really do appreciate it. If it was later in the tailgate and I was sort of in a different zone, if you know what I mean, I do apologize. The night game got me. That's all I can really say. But thank you to everyone at the tailgates. I thought it was really interesting. Even people that, you know, I met some people, and this has been a cool thing. I've met some people that even know who I am and say they disagree with me but respect what I'm doing. For those people, I truly, genuinely appreciate that. That means a lot, because listen, we don't all have to agree with each other, but at the end of the day, we're all Gamecocks, right? So I appreciate everyone that took their time at the tailgates to reach out, to say hello, to talk Gamecocks football, just to, you know, offer their hospitality. That means a lot to me, and I really, really do appreciate it. Another thing is, I mentioned a lot of times, you guys could do me a favor, hit the pause button right now, go to iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever you're listening, whatever platform you're listening on, do me a favor, leave a 5-star review or leave your thoughts, leave your feedback, just leave a review. It helps boost up the show, helps other people find the show that maybe aren't familiar with the Spurs Up Show. But if you could do me a favor, again, go to whatever platform you're listening to the show on, leave a review. It just helps out the Spurs Up Show and helps boost the credibility, if you will, of the show. So I really, really do appreciate that. Also, one other thing, Behind the Beak episode 6 dropping on Wednesday afternoon. Awesome stuff. You guys kind of get to see my hometown. Went home and watched North Augusta Strom Thurmond on Friday afternoon, and then obviously the Kentucky game on Saturday. Got a lot of good footage at the tailgates. A lot of good video in the stadium too, which was really, really cool. So Behind the Beak episode 6, be sure to check that out on YouTube or on Twitter, you know, Facebook, Instagram, wherever. But it's on, the full video will be on YouTube. So, all right, so let's get into it. As far as the bye week blues is what I call it. And I asked on social media, does anybody else have the bye week blues? Because the blues are for me is there's not a lot to talk about going into a bye week. There's really not a lot to talk about. Gamecocks obviously off this week, one of their two bye weeks for the 2019 season. Obviously a lot of college football on Saturday, but the Gamecocks and Clemson off, because I know a lot of people, you know, just around the state in general, no football in the state this week as far as the two big schools. So the Gamecocks are off. What do we talk about? The one thing I will touch on, because again, I'm going to spend most of the show really focused on your listener questions, your voicemails, and then the great interview with Derek Watson. But the one question I pose is just, you know, what does South Carolina need to work on over the bye week the most? Because, you know, I think a bye week, it's a great opportunity for teams to rest up, obviously get healthy. I think this is going to be a great opportunity for South Carolina to, you know, get healthy as far as like Rico Dowdle. I think even Ryan Helinski, you know, just lines of scrimmage everywhere. It just gives the entire team an opportunity to catch its breath, if you will. And I'm not saying they need it, they just through 5 weeks, but it gives your team the opportunity to do that. But I actually ran a poll on social media, which I'm looking for right now, if I could just find it. Basically asking you guys, you know, what do you think is the one thing that the Gamecocks need to focus on and work on over the bye week? And here's the poll right here. I said, what's the biggest thing you think the Gamecocks need to improve on in the bye week? Tackling, pass blocking, play calling, or other, which is pretty funny. Just under 1,000 votes, 45% of you say play calling. So I don't know what Brian McLennan, if he needs to spend more time thinking about what plays he's going to call against Georgia and the rest of the season, or no, 28% of you guys said tackling, 21% said pass blocking, and then 6% said other. You know, for me specifically, what do I think South Carolina needs to work on over the bye week? I think for me, it's going back and just focusing on the little things like tackling. I think tackling is a big thing. I think play calling, I do almost agree with it in the sense of I think the Gamecocks need to continue to work on developing their identity. I talked about that a lot in the Monday show, that I really hope the Gamecocks stick with that and they really embrace that tough mentality, that tough physical identity and wanting to run the football and getting Tavian Feaster and Rico Dowdle 10, 15 plus touches every single game, because I think that's what they need to do. I think that's going to be what's best suited for this team, you know, for South Carolina football, but for this team, especially with a true freshman quarterback, especially going on the road to Georgia, you're going to need to run the football. So I think for me, that's what I'd like to see. And, again, we're not going to know what they're working on, but I imagine they're working on the fundamentals. But I'd like to just see this team continue to kind of find out more about itself, focusing on themselves, not even worrying about Georgia, obviously, until we get to game week. But, yeah, for me, it's just focusing on the little things, getting better at the little things, getting 1% better every day. I know that seems like coach speak, but, you know, just – you know, getting better in that department, continue to develop. This team is a young, not a young team in a sense, but you have a young quarterback and it's a team, especially Ryan Helinski, that needs to continue to develop. So I think that'll be the biggest thing over the bye week. So like I said, not a lot to talk about in football. As you guys see, I'm already done talking about it just because, again, blame the bye week, don't blame me. Frank Martin, I do want to talk about Frank Martin. Had his first official presser on Wednesday afternoon. A lot of good stuff. He had the funny comment about the preseason polls. Basically, I put up, don't ask Frank Martin about preseason polls. Frank Martin's a great time in the presser. He's hilarious. He's very candid and open, and I think that's something that a lot of coaches really don't do anymore. So it's really refreshing to hear Frank Martin kind of just go off on people and be honest and stuff like that. But I was impressed with his comments, and he sounds very confident. I think he should. You know, I put up the question on social media, you know, what are your realistic expectations for Gamecocks basketball? And most people, I would say, are saying NCAA tournament. And I would be the same. I'm the same way. I think this is an NCAA tournament team, and it needs to be an NCAA tournament team because I think, again, this is a big year for Frank Martin. I mean, every year is a big year, but this is a team that should make a run at the NCAA tournament, no questions asked. I think Frank Martin sounded very confident in that. I think the Gamecocks have a good chance at doing that. But, you know, we'll see. Obviously, we'll see. Again, it's a long season. But, no, I really liked what I heard from Frank Martin overall. I think he's a coach that sounds very confident. I think he really likes his guard play. He sounds like he likes his bigs that have transferred in. He likes the leadership on his team. He likes the overall speed. I know that's one thing he talked about is how quick they are. He likes the overall speed of his team. So very, very good stuff. Very, very good stuff from Frank Martin in his Wednesday presser. Other news and notes to get to. Georgia game announces a noon kickoff. You know, it's funny. I hated that at first just from the football fan in me coming out, you know, hate noon kickoffs, whatever. But, you know, being on the road, you do get the less raucous environment. It's not going to be as crazy at Georgia, and any advantage you can get is a good one. So a noon kickoff might be just what the doctor ordered. Again, I can go ahead and spoil it for you guys. I'm not going to be picking South Carolina to beat Georgia, but it could be something that helps at least keep the game close. Maybe you catch Georgia off guard. You never know. So either way, that game's a noon kickoff. DJ Wanham, by the way, I want to talk about these two guys, DJ Wanham and Joseph Charlton. DJ Wanham getting Defensive Player of the Week, Joseph Charlton Special Teams Player of the Week for their performance against Kentucky. You know, no surprise. DJ Wanham was an absolute freak on Saturday against Kentucky. Joseph Charlton hitting bombs left and right, against Kentucky. The best punter in the SEC, if not the entire country. And it's a shame. I just want to remind you that Joseph Charlton didn't make a single all-conference team before the season. So it is what it is. Gamecocks lacrosse. Want to give a shout-out to those guys as well, also releasing their schedule. Definitely be sure to check those guys out. Obviously, the season not starting until February, but check them out on social media, Gamecocks Lacrosse. Their schedule released. Very, very exciting stuff. Also, Gamecocks Hockey. I don't know if you guys keep up with the Gamecocks Hockey team or not, but the first home games at the Plex Friday and Saturday. I'll be in the building for both of them. If you're in there, say what's up. I'm very, very excited. I've never been to a South Carolina hockey game before. I'm very, very excited to go. I'm going to be covering hockey all season long. We'll be talking about it on the podcast. I'm pumped. So if you're in the building, say what up. It should be a really, really good time. Also, one more thing. Talking about a lot of different sports here. Baseball. Gamecocks baseball is in full swing with practice, scrimmages, stuff like that. I will be at every single baseball scrimmage from here on out with notes, my thoughts from the scrimmages, what I see, my takeaways. Actually published the first one on Tuesday afternoon after their scrimmage. I'll be at the Friday scrimmage as well doing the exact same thing. So you guys be sure to stay up to date with that. A lot of good news, notes, insight, things like that. Really, really excited about obviously catching the guys and looking forward to a really fun season in the spring. All right, cool. So let's get into – have a couple of different questions and voicemails. I have two voicemails and then a text-in question. Really excited for this text-in question, by the way. I want to read this one off first. It says, question for Thursday. Hey, TSUS, it's Louie Louie Guy. Shout out to Louie Louie Guy, USC Louie Louie on social. I think that's what his Twitter handle is, but shout out to the Louie Louie Guy. Appreciate you, man. Modern-day legend. If you guys missed it, he was on the scoreboard dancing to Louie Louie. Play Louie Louie for every single game, USC, and let's bring Louie Louie Guy back to Williams-Brice for every single game. Shout out to you, my friend, living legend. He says, in your opinion, what is more likely, USC beating either Florida or Texas A&M or dropping a game to App State, Tennessee, or Vanderbilt? Ooh, that's a tough one. What is more likely of those two scenarios? I hate to say it. I don't want to be negative, but I think right now losing one of those three games is going to be more likely than beating Florida or A&M. I don't know. It's a 50-50. I mean, I'm 51-49 that way. Like, I'm not sold on it. I mean, I do think South Carolina could certainly – I'm not sold on Florida, and A&M is not nearly as good as I thought they'd be with Kellen Mond, although that game is in College Station. I don't like the odds there. but – And then, you know, that three-game stretch, App State, Tennessee, and Vanderbilt, you know, Vandy always gives USC trouble. I know Tennessee's horrible. It's in Knoxville, but Tennessee is horrible. I think App State's the toughest game of those three. I think App State's a good chance they're ranked when South Carolina plays them. But I think it's 51-49. It's really a toss-up. I'll say it's more likely they lose one of the three. But, again, it's 50-50 for me, man. So, really, really good question because that is that's a tough one for sure. So, like I said, got two voicemails, and then we'll get into listener questions from Instagram. But let's go ahead and get through these voicemails.
Hey, Chris, this is Dylan from Lake City. First, I want to get on at the Kentucky game. I saw you behind the student section. Shook your hand and told you I liked the show, and I don't really know what you replied back on. I don't know if you really remember, given your condition. I don't want to knock on that too much, but I want to say the game was great, really electric in the stadium, ready to prepare for Georgia. Running game looked really, really good. Defense looked stout. Every pass pretty much was contested. We got in the backfield consistently. Hoping we can do similar to Georgia, even though Kentucky's pretty trash. Sawyer Smith looked like he did not know where his receivers were. Did not know if that was a miscommunication or not, but at least the DBs still were on the receivers either way. Great show. Love it. And go Cox.
All right, Dylan, appreciate the voicemail, man. I do remember seeing you again. The night game got me. That's all I can say. Tip of the cap to the night game. Sometimes you just got to hold the L, and I'm going to hold the L because I was feeling pretty good. We got the kickoff, feeling pretty good. The night game got me. Sometimes it gets the best of us. Even to the best of us, it happens. So my apologies. Won't happen again. But no, I definitely remember you, man. I appreciate you shouting out. And yeah, I mean, you know, again, I don't – going back to what you said about Kentucky and kind of the comments on their team, you know, a lot of people have been asking, you know, is it that Kentucky is so bad or are we so good? And, like, I think it's a mixture of both. Like, I think Kentucky's a bad football team. Let's not get it twisted. The level of competition will step up immensely against the Georgia Bulldogs. But, you know, overall, you know, a good win, but you make a lot of good points. Sawyer Smith looked completely lost. I don't even know if he's healthy, but the Gamecocks did what they had to do. So, overall, good win. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I think I don't ever remember a season where we're five games in and we know less about a team than we know about South Carolina right now. Because I don't really know what to think at this point or what to make of this team. Kind of interesting. So, anyways, we'll get to this last voicemail here.
Hey, Chris, this is Dylan from Lake City again. I know I called yesterday, but I was talking with a guy at work and just made me think about it. I want to hear what you had to say. Everybody's on the 5-month step train, including me, pretty much, because I don't, like you, I don't trust his coaching staff. But I do want to put in perspective that when Clemson got Dabo, for those first couple of years there, I remember everybody having optimism, and then all of a sudden they were like, oh, he can't do it. You know, he was losing to Carolina, and it was just wasn't, it was okay seasons, and it was good seasons, but it wasn't great seasons. And of course, that's what they wanted was championships. And then all of a sudden, nobody wanted him, and then all of a sudden, bam, he's got a championship. And now everybody, they were all sold Dabo then. I feel like we might be doing the same thing with Muschamp. I'm not saying I don't trust him. I don't think he's the guy, but neither did they with Dabo. So do you think maybe we might be going through the same thing, or you think this is a failure? Love the show and just want to hear your opinion. Go Cox.
All right, Dylan, double dipping on the voicemails, my man. I do appreciate it. No, I do not think this is the same thing as Dabo, just long story short. The thing is that maybe you could say that and justify that if Muschamp hadn't already failed at another school. I mean, I think that's a big proponent of it. You know, Dabo was an unknown. And here's the thing. Dabo's biggest problem was he couldn't beat Carolina. It's not that they weren't good. I mean, they won the ACC or their side of the ACC a couple of those years, but they couldn't beat South Carolina. I think that was the biggest reason why Clemson wanted to fire him, not because they weren't winning championships. You know, it'd be different if we were winning 8, 9, hell, even 10 games a year with Muschamp, and the biggest thing was just we couldn't beat Clemson. Well, I mean, that's a different story, but, you know, there have been other bigger glaring issues and problems with the program that Will Muschamp has built to this point. And yeah, it's just a completely different situation to me. That's just me again. It's a completely different situation in my eyes, but you know, I guess it's an interesting talking point, if you will, but no, I don't think there's really any similarities. I mean, again, Dabo was an unknown and Clemson was his first head coaching job. I mean, the problem with Muschamp is this has happened before with him, that he's failed another school. Listen, I'm not, and I already talked about on Monday's show, I'm not naive to think, look, one game doesn't change everything. And like I said, Kentucky's a bad football team. I'll be very, very intrigued to see how South Carolina plays in Athens. Gamecocks have not been good outside of Williams-Brice this year. They look terrible outside of Williams-Brice. And Georgia's a really good team, but how does the team look? But again, I'm same as you. I'm still not. I mean, do I believe that Muschamp's the guy to get South Carolina to, you know, back to Atlanta? No, I don't. At this point, I just don't. Until proven wrong, I don't believe it. But no, I don't think there's really a whole lot of similarities with Muschamp and Dabo. I think it's two completely different situations. And Muschamp does not deserve to be compared to Dabo in any sort of way. I mean, he's got to win something. So, at just, you know, just being honest. So, let's get to these other questions here on Instagram. Got a couple. J Rowland Realtor says, you notice he finally went with the 4-3 defense and we dominated. Been saying it. Yeah, I mean, I thought they really stacked the box, played the run, and it really worked out for him. And I hope they continue to do that, be aggressive on defense. Obviously, it's going to depend on the matchup. But I think against Georgia, I'd love to see him stack the box. And I know Jake Fromm's a great quarterback, but in that game, you've got to say, hey, you're not going to just run the ball down our throat. Jake Fromm, you're going to have to beat us with your arm. And you kind of hope that he'll make some mistakes. You know, he'll make some uncharacteristic throws and that your guys on the outside, J.C. Horn and Israel McQuamu, can lock up their man. Again, the Georgia wide receivers are not Alabama's receivers. I mean, this is going to be a different type of matchup. So, you know, I think you take your chances there. You play, you know, you let that defensive line work. You bring some extra guys in that box, and you let the guys on the outside lock down and man up on their guys. So, we'll see. Cap_way, is Florida a top 10 team? In my opinion, no. With probable back-to-back losses, I think we hand them a third. I don't think Florida's a top 10 team, no. Absolutely not. I think the Gamecocks will have a really, really good shot to beat them at home. I don't know if they will right now. There's obviously a lot of football to play until that point. But, no, I do not think Florida's a top 10 team at all. And I think Auburn beats them pretty badly this Saturday in the Swamp. Jonathan Weatherford, think Swearinger would come help our defensive backs. I think DJ Swearinger, you know, obviously he was just released. I think DJ Swearinger, though, is a little more concerned with getting back in the league because I think he's a guy that certainly can still play ball at that level. So I think he's probably a little bit more concerned. Could he help, though? Sure, of course he could help. He's an NFL defensive back. Yeah, of course he could help. Let's see. Bassman Caleb says, in comparison, who's done a better job through their first 5 years at South Carolina, Boom or Spurrier? This is a joke, right? It's a joke. I mean, come on. I mean, Steve Spurrier. I mean, I get why you're saying that because the record-wise, but – and I know the times are different because Georgia and Clemson are so good, but, dude, Spurrier actually beat Clemson. He beat Georgia. He won big games. He did things that have never been done in those first 5 years. I know they were rough, a couple of them 6-6 seasons that people were questioning whether Spurrier really had the mojo or not. But come on, man. Like, I mean, here's the thing. Times were different, too. The expectations weren't what they are right now. So, I mean, I'll give Muschamp the benefit of the doubt there. But other than that, I mean, you know, you got to go Spurrier, in my opinion. Jillian.dequatro. I think I'm saying that right. Jillian.dequatro. I love y'all. Jillian, love you, too. Seriously. Thank you so much. Blaine_2008, what are the keys to the game to pull out a win at Georgia? I'll have all of my keys to the game next week, but the keys to the game right now to come off the top of my head is, like I said, your defensive line's got to play its best game of the season. Stack the box. Make Jake Fromm beat you through the air. And, again, you got to kind of hope that he has a little bit of an off day, if you will. I think South Carolina offense needs to come out and have that same physical mentality and run the football and get it in Rico Dowdle's and Tavian Feaster's hands. And take as much pressure as you possibly can off Ryan Helinski. Because, again, love Ryan. He's got as much arm talent as any kid I've ever seen, but he's a true freshman. Like, it's not smart to go into Athens, Georgia, and ask a true freshman to go win the game for you. So I think the Gamecocks need to shorten the game, run the football, stop Georgia's running game. I mean, it really comes down to as simple as that. Be the more physical team. I mean, really, it comes down to that simple. But, and you're going to have to hope the ball bounces your way, you know, force some turnovers. That's how you pull an upset. That's how you spring the upset, is get a couple of turnovers, whatever it takes. So that off the top of my head is what it's going to come down to pull the upset. But obviously I'll have more of my keys to the game, stuff like that, next week. But yeah, that's kind of what comes to mind initially. Big Dog_2003, last question here. Who do you think should be the starting running back based on talent, Feaster, or Dowdle? I mean, listen, I think Tavian Feaster's probably got more overall talent, but you don't start based on talent. You start based on what you've done on the field. And Rico Dowdle has done more than enough, in my opinion, to be the number one running. Like, he hasn't lost the job. I mean, does anybody out there think that Rico Dowdle's lost the job by any means? And again, it's more of a 1A, 1B situation, I think, at this point anyways. But Rico Dowdle, in my mind, hasn't done anything to lose the job to Tavian Feaster at all. So I think Rico Dowdle should be the RB1. But again, those guys both need to touch the ball 12 to 15 times a carry at minimum. I think that's a good – that's a very, very good recipe for South Carolina offensively. So – appreciate the questions. Appreciate the voicemails, as always. Really, really excited to get in this interview, guys. Derek Watson, a.k.a. Squeaky, as Gamecock fans know him as, one of the most well-known Gamecocks of all time. Great Gamecock running back. Rushed for over 2,000 yards in his career. Had so many memorable runs for the Gamecocks. Helped the Gamecocks turn around from that 21-game losing streak to back-to-back Outback Bowl victories. Talk a lot about his play on the field, and also a lot of stuff off the field. A guy that has really battled some demons and battled some personal, you know, gone through some personal trials and tribulations, and really learned a lot about his story and just who he is as a person. And very, very intriguing stuff. Urge you to listen to it. Fantastic interview. And it's brought to you by our friends over at SeatGeek. Guys, we're right in the middle of the season. We got a lot of football left. If you need your tickets to any Gamecock sporting events, go download the SeatGeek app or go to SeatGeek.com. Use the promo code SPURSUP to save $20 off your first purchase. I also want to urge you, if you're an Atlanta Braves fan, if you're going to MLB, any MLB playoff games, I know the Braves play on Thursday afternoon, Friday. I don't know the schedule beyond that, but I know for a fact Thursday and Friday. If you're going to those playoff games, I know a lot of you that listen to this are probably Braves fans. Heck, some of you might be in Atlanta. Why not save $20 off your tickets for the NLDS? Why not save $20 off? Use that promo code SPURSUP. You can also get tickets to NFL, NHL, NBA, concerts, comedy club events, doesn't have to be sports. Our friends at SeatGeek are going to have it for you. They've got a great ticket rating app where they actually rate the tickets for you based on the type of deal you're getting. So it's really going to give you that peace of mind. You're never going to be scared or have that feeling you might be getting ripped off, because it's going to tell you literally what type of deal you're getting. Am I getting a steal? Am I getting kind of ripped off on these tickets? Again, you're going to have that peace of mind before you click the buy button. They do all the work for you, and they make the ticket buying process super simple and super easy. Again, that's our friends over at SeatGeek. Go download the SeatGeek app or go to SeatGeek.com. Use the promo code SPURSUP, that's S-P-U-R-S-U-P, to save $20 off your first purchase. All right, enjoy this interview with former Gamecocks running back Derek Watson. All right, joining us today on the Spurs Up Show is a man that played for Gamecocks football from 1999 to 2001. During his career, he rushed for 2,078 career yards rushing, 16 total touchdowns. He also had 56 receptions for 466 yards and two receiving touchdowns. He helped lead one of the greatest turnarounds in college football history, taking the Gamecocks from 0-11 to back-to-back Outback Bowl wins in 2000 and 2001. He also spent his pro career, spent time with the Patriots, Buccaneers, and the Calgary Stampeders of the CFL. I'm very pleased to introduce former Gamecocks running back Derek Watson, better known by his nickname Squeaky by Gamecock fans. Appreciate you taking the time in. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Oh, man, the pleasure's all mine. Thanks for having me, man. GCGC, a.k.a. El Pollo Loco, the crazy chicken.
For sure. So I want to go back to the beginning for you, Derek, because actually, let me ask you, because I know I mentioned the nickname Squeaky. Do people still call you that? And where did that nickname come from?
Oh man, it's for a long time. If you were to call anybody in my family, I know they don't have house phones anymore, but if you call the house and ask for Derek, a lot of times they say who, you know. So I mean, everybody pretty much calls me Squeaky back home, family, and you know, now as a trucker, you know, truck driving, I'm in the truck driving industry, and I'm enjoying that, take a lot of pride in it, and you know, I got the name from my grandmother. Crazy story. I've been had the name since I've been probably since I was walking around. Well, my grandmother, my mom used to drop me off at my grandmother's house, and sometimes I have a little bit too much energy for her, so she'd give me a little shot of vodka, Smirnoff vodka, and that kind of put me in the corner a little bit. You know what I mean? And I guess as a kid, I kind of got a little thirst for the vodka, and she wouldn't give it to me all the time. And she said when she didn't give it to me, I'd run around the house crying, and she said I sounded like a little squeaky little rat. So she started calling me a little Squeaky. So that's where it came from. So it's a lifelong name, and I don't mind being called by it still, you know. But as you know, like I say, I'm, you know, my business name is Derek, but I still have a lot of people call me Squeaky. I still prefer Squeaky, you know.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so crazy story.
Yeah, for sure. So I want to go back, you know, to the beginning for you. You're a kid from the upstate, from Anderson, South Carolina. The Gamecocks, you know, you came in and were recruited at a very interesting time. South Carolina transitioning from Brad Scott to Lou Holtz, which is obviously a huge hire for just the University of South Carolina to get that type of name, you know, Hall of Fame, legendary head coach. Talk about your recruitment, because I know obviously you were one of the top running backs in the entire country, probably could have went anywhere. But talk about your recruitment, why you chose to be a Gamecock.
Yeah, indeed, man. You know, bring back some good memories, man, to think about those days. A lot has happened since then. But, you know, back then, I probably was the number six running back in the country, obviously Mr. Football here in South Carolina. And, you know, it was just the timing of everything with Coach Holtz coming in, pick up the Coach Holtz, miss him a lot. I love to see him and talk to him and chat with him. And, you know, it's just timing thing with him coming. It was big for me. He didn't have to do much selling, you know, with him being a run first type coach. And, you know, it didn't take much. You know, I was recruited by Tennessee, and they, you know, it was them in Tennessee and Georgia pretty much. Coach Spurrier called me one time and, you know, in classic Coach Spurrier's fashion. He said, "Hey, Derek, it's Coach Spurrier from Florida. I just want to let you know we're interested in you, but if you don't want to come down here, no problem. We get another one just like you." You know, so that was pretty much his pitch to me. So, you know, it was pretty actually rather funny, but, you know, I wasn't interested in going to Florida playing as a Gator. And So it pretty much came down to USC and Tennessee. Coach Donovan was down at Georgia, and I remember he I was supposed to go on my my recruiting visit to Georgia. It was during basketball season, and Coach Donovan's son comes up, and I just didn't want to go, so I'm hiding out and get snuck out the back of the locker room after a basketball game, just left him sitting in the parking lot, which was, it was just, that was the wrong thing to do. I shouldn't have done that. But I had made up my mind that I wanted to go to USC, and pretty much that night is when I made my verbal commitment. And Tennessee was in it, so it was really, Carolina or Tennessee. And obviously Tennessee won the national championship that year, and it was, I guess they won the national championship on a Saturday night, and Monday morning all their coaching, their whole coaching staff was at Palmetto High School, which was a big deal at Little Palmetto down in Williamston. I mean, they came in with their Ava Rex Tostito Fiesta Bowl leather jackets, brown jackets, and man, I was, skipping class in the gym, practicing my free throws, so I'm supposed to be in Spanish class, but I'm down at the gym shooting free throws. And I just noticed there's a lot of commotion in the hallway and everything, and people were pouring out of the classrooms. And I look out of the gym doors, and I see all the coaches walking down, and just everybody was in awe. And, it was a big deal. I was their first visit after they won the national championship. I was the first recruit they came to visit, So it was, it was a big deal, I went on my visit up there. They flew me up there in their private jet and everything. And so I'm on the plane, and so I'm with the pilot. It's just me, the pilot, the co-pilot. And I'm sitting back there, and they have the ice chest and everything, the private jet. It was real, it was set up pretty nice. Had Coca-Colas and Pepsis and everything on the top. And he finally looks back there and say, "Hey, my man, if you dig down in there further enough, you might find what you're looking for." So I, peeled back the layers on the top, and you got the Hennessy, the Crown, the Grey Goose. Oh, okay, there it is. But anyway, it's not a long trip, but they let me fly the plane, once you get it up there, ain't really much to it, but it was a good gesture to kind of let me sit behind the wheel in the cockpit and everything. But coming to Carolina, it's really something I reflect back on, because it wasn't cool to be a Gamecock at that time. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a real big talker about myself personally, but it's some things that I like to talk about and shed light on that. Like, say, at that particular time, going from the transition from Brad Scott to Coach Holtz, it wasn't, per se cool to be a Gamecock. And they had a 1-10 season before that year. So I chose the Gamecocks over the national championship team. And I think making that decision as a Mr. Football in South Carolina, number 6 running back in the country, and then turn down the national champions for Carolina, it paved the way for in-state recruiting for Carolina to get a Demetrius Summers, to get a Marcus Lattimore, to get a Jadeveon Clowney, Alshon Jeffries, Sidney Rice, So I feel like I'm a pioneer in making the decision to stay in state with Carolina.
Without a doubt. So I want to go back to, again, you get on campus fall of 99. We already talked about Lou Holtz, but talk about just your first interactions with him, because I've had, like I told you, a couple guys on from you guys' era, and it's the Lou Holtz stories are pretty entertaining. But what were your first interactions like with Lou Holtz?
I guess we'll go back to a house visit. He came, and it was kind of a smear campaign against Coach Holtz that the Tennessee coaches knew I was leaning toward going to USC, and they had gotten to my grandmother and my dad, and pretty much kind of sold them on Coach Holtz was doing illegal stuff to get me down at Carolina, which he didn't have to. People just couldn't understand why would I choose 1-10 ball club, which, you know, doesn't have a historical dominance in football over the national champions. But it was solely because I grew up going to Carolina games. I had a baseball coach and a good friend that I played Little League with that was Carolina fans. And I went to a lot of Clemson games being from the upstate and around Anderson, but I went to just as many Carolina games. And, man, I remember watching Tony Watkins play, which was my favorite player. You know what I mean? One of my all-time favorite Gamecocks. Tony Watkins, Brandon Bennett, Rob DeBoer. I mean, Anthony Wright, of course, and Steve Tannehill. I mean, the list go on and on. You know what I mean? So, it was just kind of a situation. It was the big elephant in the room when he came to the house. You know what I mean? And, you know, the way he handled the visit and everything, my grandmother was giving him the cold shoulder. My dad was in, he was in there asleep, you know, so, you know, and, we just talked, man. And, he really made me feel accepted. You know what I'm saying? His way of bringing me in, I felt accepted before I even signed. So I pretty much, I wasn't 18. And so I had to get my grandmother to sign my letter of intent. She wouldn't sign my letter of intent. So that morning, signing day, man, it was, it was a tough time. I went into school, probably around about 7 o'clock, 7:30 or so. School started at 8 on signing day. And, I was called up to the office, by the principal, and I went up to the office and my principal, his son actually went to East Tennessee State. I found out later that they had promises of giving his son a coaching job at Tennessee had I went on to Tennessee. And my brother, who came to school with me, had on all Carolina. He already knew that I was going. He had the Carolina hat on and a sweater. They kicked him out of the school. You know, they locked the doors on him. He was about lit up, about half drunk anyway. So they kicked him out, you know. So I'm in my principal's office. My principal wants me to go to Tennessee. They were on a conference call with all the coaches on the Tennessee staff. And I was in the principal's office from about 8 o'clock to lunchtime, 11, 12. So, and I finally said, man, I need a break. I need to go eat something. And I went to go to the cafeteria, and a mentor just so happened. A good mentor, like a father figure of mine, mm-hmm. got by the name of Tommy Ellison, businessman up here in upstate in Anderson. And he came to the school, and he just in the hallway said, man, what's wrong? You're supposed to be happy. And I was just worn out, and, you know, they were trying to persuade me, and they were talking about Coach Holtz, and then they was calling Coach Holtz and had him on the phone, and they was just trying to get him out of character, you know what I mean? And mm-hmm. just the way he handled himself and by handling everybody, you know what I mean? So so I ate a little lunch, and I came back around 1 o'clock, and so the word got out to my high school football coach what was going on, so he came in the office. He used to call me big guy. He said, what's wrong, big guy? And I didn't want to say nothing in front of my grandma. My dad was in the office. He pulled me outside. He said, what's wrong with you? I was like, Coach, man, they want me to go to Tennessee. He's like, what do you want to do? I said, man, I want to go to Carolina. He said, well, what's the problem? We're going down to the library. They had all the cameras and everything set up for the signing day, the table and everything. And they were just waiting on me for hours and hours and hours. They wouldn't let me out of there. So he said, well, what do we wait on? He went back in there. He says he wants to go to Carolina. We're going down here to the library to sign these papers. If y'all want to come, y'all can come. If not, we're gone. And that was my way out, you know, so I'm gone. So, you know, to see the pictures from signing day, to see my dad on one side and my grandma on one side, they both wanted me to go to Tennessee. I'm smiling with the pen in my hand, and that man, they just stone faced, you know what I mean? And, you know, but. And, you know, so I chose to come on to Carolina, and Coach Holtz, man, I really had a respect for him for how he handled the situation, you know what I mean? And our relationship from there, we just built on that. And and the guys on the team, they used to call me his son, you know, where your daddy at? They, you know, this little stuff like that, just, you know, just playing around in the locker room. But they used to call me his son. And, man, it was kind of like your parent or your grandparents. You can't do any wrong mm-hmm. in their eyes, you know what I mean? And but on the field, I know I had the off the field issues, but on the field, he knew I was a Warrior, and I done every play just like it was a game. You know what I mean? Practice, so you know how you practice how you play, and I was just balls to the wall. Excuse my language, but I was just balls to the wall in practice. So and it was undeniable. You know what I mean? The off the field issues are one thing, but on the field, I was the example of what a player should practice and play like. You know, so I think we both had a respect for each other, and I definitely appreciate him as a coach. Now, it's different for everybody. You know, you got some people. There's no gray areas. Either you like him or either you don't like him or you love him. You know what I mean? So I was one that loved him, and I think the feeling was reciprocated. So that made me feel good that my coach, he always went to bat for me.
No doubt. So, Squeaky, I want to talk about on the field your freshman year, because you carried the ball 111 times, 394 yards, 3.5 yards per carry. I know how the season went as far as records concerned, but for you specifically on the field, being a Mr. South Carolina football, you know, being one of the top running backs in the country out of high school, how do you feel like your game transitioned from high school to the collegiate level and the SEC level?
I actually got off to a great start. I don't know if I'm sure you do, but the monsoon up in NC State.
Yep,
it was raining, man. I, you know, it's one of those games you have to wring out your socks at halftime. You know what I mean? And it was raining so bad, and it was almost as if everybody's field was wet except for mine. And end up having I guess about 18 carries, 121 yards. As a freshman, very first game as a freshman, and the basketball team wasn't doing so well. The baseball team wasn't to its greatness yet. So I'm this kid on campus, and all of a sudden, you know, in a matter of 60 minute ball game, I'm the big man on campus. You know what I mean? And it overwhelmed me a bit. And so around about mid season or so, I don't know, I guess the dynamic of the season. You still there?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Sorry. My phone just, but the dynamic of the season, with having, three Mr. Footballs in the backfield, you had me, Mr. Footballs, South Carolina, Ryan Brewer. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was my, you know, that was my trench hole warrior. You know, how they say, if you wanted somebody in the foxhole with you, mm-hmm. Ryan Brewer definitely been the guy I chose to be in the foxhole with. But Ryan Brewer from Ohio and Andrew Pinnock from Connecticut. I mean, mm-hmm. three Mr. Footballs in the backfield. And I guess I got a little ahead of myself, and I got a little down because of carries and not playing. And I mean, we also had upperclassmen at the time with Troy Hamburg. Of course, he got released from Carolina his senior year, and we had Boo Williams. I actually was thinking, you know, I started to think about transferring because I got a little down, but I hung in there. Coach Holtz and the rest of the coaching staff, Coach Buddy Pugh, was an awesome coach. I still talk with Coach Buddy Pugh, and I decided to stay on, and it was one of the good decisions I made, you know, along the way. And that season we ended up 0-11 that season. It wasn't a big high, you know what I mean? But, so from the transition from what happened is, I think that off season they went to some coaches clinic to Purdue. And that's when we transitioned from, the I and 21 personnel with two backs, one tight end, or 22 personnel, two backs, two tight ends. We went from that mm-hmm. to the spread offense. And it was pretty much the same thing Purdue was doing, but they were a little bit ahead of the curve. Mm-hmm. And as far as the spread offense, Purdue was doing it, and we're one of the schools that brought it to the SEC. We actually was the first team to bring the spread offense like that to the SEC. So what it did, my sophomore year, it defenses didn't know what to do. Of course, they knew, you know, the talent I had, but they didn't realize or they didn't know how to align for it. So it was pretty much, you know, a numbers thing. If you know, with running the spread offense and running the read option, you know, now you got so many pass options off of this spread or read option. But it was pretty much if the linebacker's out of the box, give it to him. I mean, if he's in the box, run the bubble screen, you know. And most of the time, they kept the linebacker out of the box. You know what I mean? So it was a give. And but they didn't know how to align for it yet, because again, in the SEC, they had never seen the spread offense. You know, so I think that had a lot to do with that 1,000-yard season I had as a sophomore.
No, so I want to ask you, Squeak, going back to 99, you talked about just, you know, we obviously know how tough of a season it was record-wise, everything. You talked about, you even thought about transferring. I mean, I want to ask you your honest opinion. I mean, again, you came to South Carolina at a time when, like you said, it wasn't cool to be a Gamecock, if you will. During that 99 season, or at some point in that 99 season, did you look at yourself in the mirror and just think, did I make a huge, huge mistake? When, again, like you said, you turned down the national champions, and I'm glad you did, obviously, but I mean, just being completely honest, I mean, did that ever cross your mind? Like, oh my God, what did I just get myself into?
Yeah, and no. It wasn't so much what did I get myself into. It was more so what are they thinking? You know, I mean, I'm not getting any touches. Some games I went in, some games I'm getting, but quite naturally, they were still trying to see who was going to be their guy. With me, Ryan Brewer and Andrew Pinnock. And, so, you know, it was more so, it wasn't, what was I thinking? Cause obviously I'm a Gamecock, still am, and, always have been, always will be. And, you know, so I thought about it, and it was more so just a kid pouting, you know what I mean? And, you know, going into that, that offseason, Coach Holtz pretty much assured me that he's gonna get the linemen, you know, and he's gonna, you know, just hang in there, understand how you feel, and you know, he was truthful in that, you know, that. And so what we did, of course, we had Shane Hall there as a lineman from New Jersey. He's a good lineman. Melvin Page, Larrell. We had Larrell, and we had CJ Fry, and Cedric Williams, and of course Travell Wharton. And man, I mean, for him to just have, you know, the mindset that maybe he should go from, you know, the eye set and spread it out a little, you know, and spread these guys out on defense, and he's always been a smash mouth coach, and I know that took a lot for him to do that, you know, but he wasn't spreading it out to pass it. He was spreading it out to run it. Mm-hmm. And when, you know, when it clicked to me, and what he made me understand that what he was doing, cause I'm like, we're going to the shotgun. I'm used to the eye. That's what I ran in high school. I'm a downhill guy. I like to get ahead of steam. Now I'm going from downhill step forward first to now my first step is sideways, you know what I mean? And mm-hmm. just having to get that momentum going toward the line. But once I understood the offense and what the concept was, I seen it was spread it out to run, you know, and what they thought in the SEC by not seeing it before, they thought we were spreading it out to pass it, but we was actually mm-hmm. spreading it out to run it.
For sure. So, Squeaky, going in that 2000 season, let's talk about that one. Because, again, like I mentioned at the beginning of the show, you were part of one of the greatest turnarounds in college ball history. I mean, broke the 21-game losing streak against New Mexico State. During that offseason, I mean, did you see that coming? I mean, was that something where – because I know, like you said, you guys recruited a lot. You know, Lou Holtz's second year, though. But, again, you're on a 21-game losing streak. So, I know mentally that's got to be hanging over you all offseason. But did you see that coming, that turnaround coming in 2000?
I actually didn't. You know, it was one of those things where we're just gonna hope for the best. You know, prepare for the worst, but hope for the best. However, the hope was let's see how this offense is gonna run. But obviously, I mean, we had the players on defense. I mean, Kalimba Edwards, Cecil Pigley. Cleveland Pitney, sorry about that. Cecil Cobb, Kenny Horney, Rashad Faison, Sheldon Brown, Kevin House. You had Willie Alford, which is another one of my all-time favorite players. Willie Alford. Andre Goodman. I mean, the list go on. It was clear we had the defense. You know, I believe that. I knew that, but it was the offense that was the question. And I don't think it really sunk in and with the talent we had and what we had acquired with James Atkinson coming in. I mean, who was a freak of a receiver, you know, to see him in person. James Atkinson, Corey Alexander, has some other guys. Just can't think right off right now. But, you know, obviously with Andrew Pinnock and Ryan Brewer, and that year Ryan Brewer went out to the slot. And that was big for us to have Ryan Brewer as a slot player, shaking up the defense with his wiggle and running routes, and also blocking off the edge. You know what I mean? So that done a great deal for us. But I don't think it really hit it. But Coach Holtz he's a master of conditioning men. You know, not only physically but mentally. And, man, he had us in a state of, man, we really thought we could, you know, run through a wall. And but it really and he told us that, you know, he didn't ever understand how South Carolina never done well in football, because he always said that the best athletes are in South Carolina, Florida, Tennessee. I mean, Texas. You know, South Carolina, Florida, Texas had the best athletes. And now looking back on that, he's right, because, you know, a lot of players in the NFL and played in the NFL that came from South Carolina. They don't always stay in state, but from South Carolina, you know. So I think we got up to about 5-0 maybe. And it really dawned on us. You know, we were 5-0 with a top five defense. And I don't know which game we finally lost. I'm not sure, but we were five. I think we were 4-5-0, and I think we were just about to crack the top 10 at that time. And man, I mean, it was an eye opener for us that he's right. You know, we are as good as he say we are, and I think that's gave us that head of steam to finish the season strong. But just by the dynamic of how the season was scheduled at the time. I mean, we had the Orange Crush at the time. We had we had Florida, Tennessee, and Clemson right back to back. We called that the Orange Crush, because, I mean, man, we were probably going into the Florida game. We probably had only lost one game at that particular time, and we lost three in a row, which gave us four losses. And of course, after the Clemson game, winning the Outback Bowl that year took us to 8-4, and that's another one of my claims of fame with feeling, you know, like being a pioneer for recruiting for Carolina, is we beat an Ohio State team who pretty much won the national championship. We beat those guys 2 years in a row, and they pretty much won the national championship and beat the Hurricanes. With the addition of Maurice Clarett, which I know that was a big addition at the time, but we beat pretty much the same team 2 years in a row that won a national championship that year, that beat a Miami Hurricane, outstanding football team. So, and that right there, looking back on it, we didn't realize, we knew we were good, but we didn't realize how good we were. And I didn't realize it until Ohio State won the national championship. And I'm like, man, we just beat these guys 2 years in a row, and they won the national championship, you know, with the same, pretty much the same team. And the only guy they added was Maurice Clarett. I say the only guy, but, you know,
right.
I mean, of course, obviously he was a big deal at the time, you know what I mean? So, so that season, man, it was a real, you know, real eye-opener going into our junior season, man. It really gave us some motivation in the offseason, man, that, you know, we belong. You know, we finally arrived.
No doubt. So, Squeaky, I want to talk about from the 2000 season, that Georgia game. Obviously, that was the one, I think, that sort of, you know, I would say let Gamecock fans know this wasn't just going to be an ordinary season. The home game, huge upset. Quincy Carter at those five interceptions. But I want to talk about you and that win. 20 carries for 93 yards, three touchdowns. You had four catches for 20 yards, and you also had a 53-yard kickoff return. Talk about that game, how special that one was, and would you argue that that was one of your best, if not your best game ever in Garnet and Black?
Yes, I would agree. With the exception of probably Arkansas game or that we played my junior year, but I would say as a team effort, that was the best game that we played as a team. Everybody had a good game. But the offense, man, it gave us, it gave us our identity. You know what I mean? And now we finally understood the concept that it works. I mean, man, they had Boss Bailey, Marcus Stroud, Richard Seymour. Jermaine Phillips. I mean, all those guys pretty much were first rounders, and obviously Quincy Carter was a heck of a quarterback in that era, and five interceptions on him, and having a good offensive game, and I think that was a defining moment for us, as a team.
For sure. So that 2000 Clemson game, I want to jump a little bit ahead because obviously again, the 2000 season was special, but I think one of the most well-known games for you, Squeaky, was the 2000 Clemson game. Nobody ever forgets the 61-yard run you have. I feel like it's one of the most iconic images in the rivalry where you're running to the corner and then end zone, you point at the Clemson player. talk about that run. Obviously, unfortunately, the game Clemson won benefit of the push-off, but talk about game for you, 25 carries, 150 yards, and that iconic touchdown. And what did Lou Holtz say to you when you got back to the sideline?
Oh, man, that's interesting. You bring that up. I was going to shed a little light on that. So, at that moment, all my family and friends were just happened to be on the opposite hill, not the hill, but one hill in their stadium. And I was just happening to run right there. And I understand taunting penalties and I understand celebration penalties, unsportsmanlike penalties, but I really didn't intend on doing that. It was just something that I was just so, I was just so amped that I just pointed at him. And I went on into the end zone and did my little thing. And So I did my thing and I'm coming back to the sideline. Now, before I get there, I realized they threw a penalty. And I said, oh, man, old man's going to be lurking. You know what I mean? So I'm like, I got to come up with something to tell him. He said, Derek, what are you thinking? I said, Coach, I was trying to stiff arm him. And it kind of caught him off guard. I said I was trying to stiff arm him. So he bought it. I told him I was trying to stiff arm him. So obviously they pushed off to win the game. And so we get back that Saturday night. We come back. We're off Sunday. And we have our team meeting on Sunday night. And we're all in the team meeting room. And Coach Holtz pretty much giving his spiel and everything. And he was just saying how hard it is to be the team with 13 guys, with 13 people. You got 11 people on the field. You got to count for one person because they're playing at home. And then you got to account for the 13th person, which is the officials. You know what I mean? He said it's kind of hard to beat people, kind of hard to beat a team with 13 people on the field. And he says you got Derek Watson running down the sideline, tries to stiff arm a guy, and they called a daggone penalty. And my roommate, Michael Ages, is sitting right beside me. He kind of did a little crack up, like a little, but everybody's quiet. So it sounded real loud, and Coach Holtz heard it. He said, hey, man, Michael Ages. Get your explicit down here right now. So he called Michael Ages out in front of the whole team meeting room, get Michael Ages to come up there. He's standing beside his coach. Say, if you got something to say to this team, you say it right now. I mean, just put him on the spot, blasted him, because he really thought I tried to stiff on him, And at that point, it was, boy, you better not say nothing to D. White, because, man, that's it, because your daddy going to get you. crazy story. But he went for it, So, I've been known to tell a little tale or two sometimes.
So, did he ever watch the film and figure it out that you didn't actually try to stiff on him?
I'm sure he watched it Saturday night and them grading the film. I'm sure he watched it. And, and, uh, obviously he can see it. You know, his age doesn't have nothing to do with anything. I mean, the guy can do everything. I mean, play golf, shoot pool, play cards, magic. I mean, it was nothing we could beat him at. You know what I mean? And I'm sure he did, but for whatever reason, he thought I stiff on that guy. And well, he thought I was trying to stiff on him. I mean, I guess the gloves helped because you couldn't see the finger out. It wasn't, you know, you couldn't, if it wasn't definitive that you could see one finger sticking out. So you could just see a gray glove. So it kind of, you know, maybe at being 60, you might have a little bit of a blur right there. So it may have looked like I tried to stiff on him, but I kind of felt bad for Mike. I was like, oh man, he done got him in front of everybody, man. I'm sorry, Mike, my bad, you know.
For sure. So I want to ask you, you know, Squeaky, about that sophomore year for you. Like, you know, it's crazy. You take a look at that year. You didn't there wasn't a single game where you didn't have double-digit carries, which I think is really, really impressive. But that was your 1,000-yard year. Again, you finished with 1,066 yards, 11 touchdowns. Really, you were the workhorse back for the Gamecocks and, you know, the big play guy for South Carolina. I mean, was it as simple in that sophomore year for you as just getting more opportunities, or did something click for you in your game on the field that helped you have that big year?
Well, with the coaching staff and with the conditioning program, the off-season conditioning program with Pat Moore, and you know, it was pretty much I've played sports my whole life, but I've never been in shape. You know, and that off season coming into my sophomore year, I actually got into top shape and into top conditioning, you know, and so I was, you know, I was geared up for that type of season. And but like I say, schematically, with running that spread offense and the defense just looking like a deer in headlights, not really knowing what to do, because again, their coaches called the game to stop the pass, you know, because just by alignment to everybody got an assignment, so you got to respect your keys, and so you can't be out of alignment, you know what I mean? So just by alignment, the coaching staff knew what the teams were going to line up in. If we lined in a certain personnel, or if we lined up the guys outside of the hash marks, you know, what type of alignment there would be, it pulled one of the linebackers would have to respect their key, and by alignment, you know, schematically, it done a lot of opening up some lanes, and with the offense, man, and the offensive line, and with the receivers buying in, man, and everybody, I mean, it was, you know, it was a total effort by the offense, man. We understood, you know, everybody, everybody has a job to do, and a lot of times we could have had a better season offensively. Looking at the film, because a lot of times looking back, it was some touchdowns that we let get away, and it was just always one guy. I mean, everybody done their job, but it was always one guy. You know, had he done this, this was boxed. You know what I mean? And right. Not only for me, but on other plays, it was always one guy. You know, so we probably could have, you know, as a team, had a better season that year, and but. You know, a lot of times, you know, just things happen, and you got some guys playing on the other team that are good as well. Everybody's good. You know, getting ready, you know, to get to the next level. You know, in college, you know, everybody is a whole lot better than in high school. So, you know, some guys just shed some blocks and made some exceptional plays to make those things happen. But again, a lot of our guys were in place, and it came down to one guy. And that also helped us, you know, when we were watching film, and they made a conscious effort to point it out, to let us know how good is and Skip Holtz saying, man, you know, it's always one guy, you know, not pointing out anybody, but just think about it, you know, the plays that we look at and on film day and just watching and grading the film. They pointed out, and we really literally seen that, you know, it came down to one guy, you know, maybe not doing his job or maybe tired. And we pretty much, we seen that, you know, and we understood that, and that helped us going forward.
For sure. So, Squeaky, you guys win the 2000 Outback Bowl over Ohio State. Like you mentioned, you beat them again in 2001. You know, when you look back at it, how much pride do you take in it currently, looking back to that you're one of the guys that really helped turn around this kind of football program and lay the foundation for what we saw with Steve Spurrier and then the expectations that are laid out today?
Oh, man. I mean, you're totally spot on, man. And what you're saying, I mean, again, we're both saying this. You know, it's kind of like you read my mind here, but I've been going over these things in my head for years. But, you know, beating Ohio State, of course, historically good football team, and the way we beat them last second field goal, and having that turnaround from going 0-11 to 8-3, and then 8-4, then obviously we're playing Ohio State again in the Outback Bowl, you know. So of course they wanted to get some revenge, or, you know, they didn't have any respect for us, but I'm sure they did go on, you know, that following season, you know. But, you know, again, we booked them again. And like I say, we beat an Ohio State team 2 years in a row that pretty much won that championship that next season with pretty much the same players.
For sure. So that 2001 season, I want to talk about your last game in Garnet and Black, maybe your second last game in Garnet and Black, but your last game at Williams-Brice Stadium. You had a touchdown run against the Clemson Tigers. You're able to go out a winner at Williams-Brice against Clemson. How special was that one for you, especially after the 2000 game in which you guys really had one taken from you?
Yeah, I mean, it was big. Yeah, it was big for me, being an upstate kid, and you know, in the recruiting process back then, when I was a senior in high school, SEC was pretty much the only conference that had the Prop 48 deal, you know, where if a kid didn't qualify, they could still in college but have to sit out the season. And that was pretty much, what I thought I was going to have to do. And Clemson, his coach was Tommy West at the time, pretty much thought that I wasn't going to qualify. And so obviously they were recruiting me at the time, but once they thought that I wasn't going to pass the SAT, they stopped recruiting me. Well, I passed the SAT, and that's a whole other story. Well, I tell that story too. So, I took the SAT one time, and I didn't qualify. I didn't make. I guess it was 850 at the time. I don't know if it's higher than that now. But with everything and all technology, it's probably a 900-950 now. But anyway, it was 850 then. So what happened is I was seen by a doctor who was testing me for a learning disability, and so I got diagnosed with the learning disability, ADHD, and with interfere with my learning. So now that I'm diagnosed with a learning disability, now I can have the SAT read to me by a guidance counselor or a teacher from my school. And not only can I have it read to me, I don't have to do it, the written English part and the math. I don't have to do it one thing, one subject, and then the other subject. I can go back and forth, you know. So my guidance counselor, she's I think it was Melissa Cole, and she was actually a Clemson grad, and but she was our guidance counselor. She had recently graduated, and real good woman, you know what I mean. She's fairly young, and she wanted me to qualify, and so we're taking the SAT. And so she reads the question off, and she says, do you think it's A, B, C, or D? I said, I think it's D. She said, let me read the question over again. Okay. So she reads the question over again, and which one do you think it is? I think it's B. Well, sometimes you just have to go with your feeling, Derek. Oh, okay, that's B. So I went from not qualified. I actually made a 1250 on the SAT. You know what I'm saying? You know, so I went, quite naturally, they would investigate that, right? But at that particular time, John Chaney was coaching at Temple, and they were petitioning to the NCAA about the SAT being culturally biased. And with that petition going on about it being culturally biased, and me being an African American, they didn't want to mess with it. So they never questioned it. You know what I mean? So I'm at bike week at Myrtle Beach during the summer, and my test scores finally come back, and I'm at the hotel. I don't know how Miss Cole knew what hotel I was, but she found me. So I get a couple, my uncle's in there, and he comes down on the strip down, and he comes squeak. I'm like, what in the world is going on? So I come up, he's like, you got a phone call. I'm like, phone call on the room phone? I answer, oh, she's crying. I was like, who is this? She's like, it's Miss Cole. We did. I mean, you did it. So that story. Just to think back on. But anyway, yeah. So, yeah, man. You know, it was good times, man. It was good times. I mean, it's bringing up so many feelings. I had at that time, man. You know, it feels good to reflect back on those times, man. It was a good time in my life. And, you know, it's good to talk about it. And, yeah, man, I'm a proud Gamecock, still am. And like I say, I always will be. And, you know, we just have to get back to, you know, those days of that type of recruiting and that type of competitive play.
For sure. So, Squeaky, I want to ask you, you know, obviously I won't go into everything, but like you mentioned at the beginning of the show, you had some off the field. I just simply want to ask you, looking back now, if you could tell your younger self one thing, knowing what you know now, what would you say to 18-year-old or 19-year-old Derek Watson?
Oh, man, if I had known back then what I now know, I'd have more confidence because, I grew up, a lot of people didn't realize, but I grew up as a depressed kid, then dealing with depression. And, and it was part of what motivated me and fed me mentally as a player that I always looked at other players and thought they were better than me. You know, for whatever reason, you know, by the end of the game, it was clear who, you know, even basketball, it was clear who the best athlete on the court was, it was clear who the best athlete on the field was. But I had a bit of a complex and a bit of a mental issue with dealing with depression that was that went undiagnosed. So I would probably tell myself to have, I wish I had more confidence in myself, and I wish I had taken it more seriously. You know what I mean? I never thought about it being over, you know, and which I knew, I know all things come to an end, but I just never seen that end, that I never seen myself going to the NFL because, again, I always thought everybody was better than me. You know, nobody, you know, wouldn't think that, but, you know, you can't tell somebody what they see in the mirror. You know what I mean? You know, what a person says to themselves in the mirror, a lot of people don't know. You know what I mean? So, I tell myself, man, just have I wish I had more confidence in myself as an athlete, and I took more pride in that, and I wish I had taken it more seriously.
For sure. So, Squeaky, like I mentioned, you had a pro career. You spent time with the Patriots, Bucks, and then the Calgary Stampeders in the CFL. When you look back on your pro career, you know, what's the biggest thing that I guess you take away from it?
Oh, man, it's a business. You know, you got so many hands into the game. It's kind of one of those things, man. Let the athletes play on the field side the game, and a lot of times, man, with we got the same players on the field, but now we add money into the situation, and now they're starting to think about this thing about paying players in college football, which I think they should, but it's, again, you know, how do you regulate that? Because some players are obviously more valuable than others. With those type players that are, if I was a player and they say, hey, you can make some income, or, you know, but how do you regulate that? And,
how do you pay Jadeveon Clowney the same amount of money that you're going to pay your kicker? You know, so right, right. So hey, me and Jadeveon Clowney, you know, coming out of high school, hey, let me make my own money. I'll pay for my own education. You know what I mean? So, but yeah, so, yeah, man, it was, you know, just reflecting back on it, man, it was, you know, obviously good times for Carolina, you know, as a whole. And, you know, with the things I went through with having to withdraw from Carolina, I, you know, make that clear. I withdrew from Carolina. A lot of people think I got kicked out. But I actually had the choice to stay at Carolina my senior year. However, it was either stay at Carolina and set out a year and run the risk of getting caught up in the shuffle and getting lost. And hey, I was, you know, I found myself now, but I was a lost kid back then. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you get, you know, the season goes and some guys have some good, a good year. And let's say, hey, I get in trouble again. And then you're totally wiped out. You hadn't played a season. Now you're in some more trouble, you know? So I wasn't totally confident that I could stay, you know, I guess per se out of trouble. So, I elected to withdraw from Carolina and go to South Carolina State with Coach Buddy Pough. And I made some bad decisions along the way. And no disrespect to South Carolina State Bulldogs. I enjoyed my time down there. But, you know, sometimes, you know, that's one of the things that I look back on and say I wish I had set out that year, you know, and sharpened my craft a little bit as a player. And sat there and really did some soul searching and digging deep as far as being removed from the game that would have done something to me, to watch the other guys and have a good season and how happy they would be. And just to sit there and to be still, you know, because, I looking back on it, you know, obviously, I went to prison in 16. I got out here in 18. So I, with county time and prison time, I did a total of 3 years on a 5-year sentence. And it taught me a lot because I've always had ants in my pants. I always had to be doing something. And I tell people all the time, man, I got some ants in my pants that got sharp teeth. And man, when they get to biting, you know, I mean, when they get to biting, man, I go, you know, but going to prison set me down. And it made me realize who I was. Yeah, I was able to sit still and really, because I couldn't, you obviously can't go nowhere. And so what do you do with your time? You know what I'm saying? I went to college and obviously I completed 3 years of college and my half of my senior year. And I the second semester of my senior year, Andrew Pinnock and I went down to train in Kenner, Louisiana with the great Tom Shaw. And, you know, so I got education and I've had plenty of books in front of me, but I never read a book fully through until I went to prison. And I realized that I enjoy reading and it was a lot of things I realized about myself, you know, cause I never had no inner peace and I was never able to be at peace. And prison, you know, it does a lot of things depending on how you use it or utilize it. And I was able to utilize it in a positive manner. And what I took out of that is being able to be still and really focus on yourself and not have, you know, music booming in your ears and not have women around you and not have these props in your face. And you're able to actually peel back the layers and work on yourself. I mean, it took some time, mm-hmm. but I dug real deep and I found myself. You know what I mean? And I said to myself, man, had I done this my senior year and set out, it would have done the same thing to me as what it did to me being able to come out of prison with some peace and being able to find myself there.
No doubt. No, powerful stuff. So, Squeaky, one last question. I'm going to let you go here. But when you look back, obviously, your South Carolina career, 1999 to 2001, when you look back on your career, what was your favorite memory in Garnet and Black?
Oh man, man, it's a lot of them, man. It's a lot of them. I still think about them to this day. And if I sat there long enough, I could think about one, you know, or two that I hadn't thought about in years. But, man, it was a lot of good memories, man. Obviously, winning the Outback Bowl was a big deal. 2 years in a row beating Ohio State. And again, they won a national championship with pretty much the same team. And for me to sit and think about, man, how good we were, and to think about how much better we could have been. We were sold, we bought in, but it was just, it was a part of us that had a bit of a reserve, because again, Carolina wasn't historically a good football team leading up to the 99, 2000, 2001, 2002, and on to the Spurrier era. So it was a bit by the dynamic of the history on the football team, I think, is what held us back from being pretty much contenders for the national championship, because, I mean, we bought in, you know what I mean? But maybe it was a bit that we didn't feel we belonged that separated and made the difference in us being 8-4, 9-3 Outback Bowl winners, opposed to going to one of, you know, what they were calling one of these Power Five bowls, or you know, if you will. But man, it's a lot of good memories. But I'd say one, if I had to say one, it would probably be the 2002 Arkansas game at home. Mm-hmm. That was a big time, and that I reflect back on. Had a big day that day, and we all as a team effort had a big day. Obviously, beating Alabama at home was a big deal also. I'd say beating Alabama at home and beating Arkansas at home, which they were a good team, but it was just the atmosphere that day, man. It was nostalgic, man. It was euphoric. And it was just about like when we – and I was at this game. It was about like when we beat the number one team, Alabama, in the Spurrier era, beat Alabama, the number one team at home. And I was there for that game, and I got that feel, and it took me back to those days, man. I felt like I was on the team again.
For sure. Well, Squeaky, appreciate you taking the time, man. I want to speak for all of Gamecock Nation when I say, you know, through thick and thin, whatever happened in the past is the past as far as off the field, but it was a pleasure to watch you in Garnet and Black, and I can't remember many more players that were as electric as you were on the football field, man. I really do appreciate you taking the time, and let's definitely chat again sometime, man. Awesome story and a lot of great memories, like you said, and glad everything's going well for you now at this juncture, but really do appreciate you as a Gamecock and as a person, and would love to talk ball with you again sometime.
Yeah, man, I certainly appreciate you having me on, man. Good luck with the rest of the season, with the show. I'm still going in Black. And, yeah, man, El Pollo Loco, man, the Crazy Chicken, GCGC.
GCGC. Appreciate it, Derek. So for Derek Watson, I'm Chris Phillips. We appreciate you guys tuning in, and we'll catch you next time on another episode of the Spurs Up Show.